Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play podcast, where this week we're talking about week one of the NRL finals. Also, our stud and dud of the week. Don't forget to follow us on all the socials, Facebook, SoundCloud, and Twitter, at the Final Play Pod.
Good to go. Let's get some.
So welcome, everyone, to the Final Play podcast. My name's Jason. With me back at home finally is Miles. Hey, Miles.
Hooray. Ready for once. Not in a secret military bunker somewhere.
Well, this is true. Yeah, what a first week of NRL finals action. Four games were played. The first game, the Roosters and Rabbitohs at the SCG. End up being 30-6, but the Roosters pretty much won that in the first half.
Yeah, they wiped out South in the first 25-30 minutes. So yeah, they'd score in the first minute, second minute, something like that.
Second minute, yeah.
Yeah, I sort of missed bits and pieces of the early part of the game due to the Boomers and Spain going into overtime, which we will never speak of again. Double overtime, that's right. We'll never speak of that again. but yeah, no, they put I don't know, the Rabbitohs. I think they played their final the week before. They were great the week before against the Roosters, and obviously the Roosters made the right adjustments. And they put them out of their misery in the first 25 minutes.
Well, yeah. I mean, speaking of their adjustments, I think they just laid off the key amount of people that, like, it's Luke Keary was that second gear. Like, they laid off that a certain amount of people the week before. And I think Luke Keary is one of them. But everybody I've chatted to about the game was that Roosters just found that second gear. And if Roosters can find that second gear, I think every team is in trouble.
Well, they could find second, third, fourth, and fifth too, I suppose. But yeah, that's if this is second gear, then everybody better look out if they still got to look out. But also too, like the Rabbitohs had to have a bit of a reshuffle of their lineup because Gagai didn't play, so that sort of screwed around with all their outside backs. They just had to put, for some reason, I don't know why Bennett switched James Roberts to the opposite side of the field, and it shouldn't really matter too much play wise. It matters combination wise. Do you know what I mean? Like it's you know, if you're used to playing with somebody and it's been Roberts and Gagai on that, probably on or be on that left hand side. It just sort of screwed with them a little bit. It took them out of. I could only assume what they would have been training for all week, and they ended up having to put. I think Dufty went out on the wing, and it just messed with all their combinations and everything, and they couldn't put any points on. They only put 6 points on, but they just, I don't know, they just look a little out of sorts. They obviously didn't have enough go forward to sort of help anybody out. They had no ball as well. The Roosters just smothered them.
Yeah. I think it really unsettled James Roberts. Like, he only ended up making 95 run meters that game. So I just think it's like he disappeared, and that's probably because he's not used to playing on that side. So he, you know, for a guy that, you know, just I guess for his stature, 95 meters is not enough. Not for a finals game anyway.
No, that's right. To sort of move him to that opposite side. It was a little bit funny, and yeah, Johnston hasn't been back that long. I think he's only been back for a month or so. So he's sort of, you know, finding his feet again, and he's been being switched from fullback to the wing. And now this year, so sort of, I think they did the same thing this week as well. You know, Campbell Graham as well in the centres. So all their backline combinations, were a little out of sync, and I think it definitely told. Not so much, not even in the back end of the game, like just from the get go. They just looked out of sync, and one of the Burgess boys to come back and to only put up 30 meters on three hit ups, like that's just not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he's been suspended. Is it George the one that's been suspended? So for him to sort of come back and lay on that sort of performance, that's just not good enough.
No. And just finishing with the Roosters, they'll probably enjoy the week off with a couple of, I guess, niggling injuries for Luke Keary and also Boyd Corner. So they should enjoy having that week off. And the Jared Warrior Hargreaves looks like he's got to go to a judiciary again this week. So I think just quickly looking, I think they're looking at entering a non-guilty plea for a tripping charge. So
six times he's been charged this year, and four times he's had to front the judiciary. So he knows where NRL headquarters is out there at Moore Park. So he should just be able to get into an Uber, and they'll know exactly where he's going. So I thought.
Yeah. Just to my second home voice. Yep. All right.
Yeah. Good evening, Mr. Warrior Hargreaves. Off to the regular. Yeah, usually that would be a pub or an alcoholic establishment of some sort. But just off the Moore Park again.
Maybe he does have a regular round there because he goes there so often.
Well, there's actually a pub that's not too far from there. It's across the road. I remember we went there when we went to the 2015 World Cup, the Cricket World Cup, and we had beers, and that was basically across the road from there. So maybe he stops in there afterwards.
Well, maybe that's what. Maybe it's his favourite pub. Maybe he doesn't mind getting suspended.
Maybe stops in there for a few quiet ones afterwards. And if he gets laid off for a week, then it was an ordinary sort of trip though. Like I don't know if he's going in just for a straight non guilty. He's not trying to get it downgraded or anything.
He's going straight non guilty because I think he's got if I'm correct, I think he's got carryover points.
He will.
You're going
without looking it up. I can still guarantee you that he's got carryovers.
I dare say yes. He's gonna have some carryover points.
Yeah, he loves carryovers.
But I mean, they even if he has to have a week off or whatever,
the problem is the next game that they play is a grand final qualifier. And that'll either be between Melbourne and Parramatta. So if he's missing for one of those, that's a big loss.
But is it? It's correct. You can't include because they're having a week off. So even if he gets a week, he can't include that next week's game.
Yeah, it's a game off. Yeah, it's not a week off. Yeah, it's a game.
Yeah,
off, so
that's right. So
he could be in a little bit of bother, I think. It didn't look good.
The next game, the Melbourne Storm going down to the Canberra Raiders, 12-10.
Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot to say, but I don't really want to say anything at the start.
How about we just start with what happened before a ball was even kicked, and
the Joey Lalor
fireworks
thing.
Fireworks gate.
It wasn't fireworks gate.
It was those stupid freaking sparkler things that were on top of the thing. Their history. now. That's it. They won't have those again at football. I'm telling you right now, they're history.
Yeah, Ricky. Ricky will blow up chunks if he sees him again.
Yeah. you can't. I'm honestly surprised that it hasn't happened before. Really?
Yeah. True. Yeah. And you know it. Well, I mean, yeah. He was able to play the game again, but it clearly didn't seem to bother the flow of their team. So.
No, but there was no flow to that game at all. There was many penalties. There was like 21 penalties. Like, for you,
all they did was that Bailey Simpson.
Stimson. Simonson.
I don't know where the P comes from. I just saying that it didn't really affect the gel of their team the way they were playing. Yes, there was a lot of stop starting in that game.
Well, he was already named at the 14 anyway, so it was just a matter of just slotting him in straight away, and then they ended up bringing him on when Cotric copped that knock to the face.
Yeah, brutal.
He copped the tag to the face, broke his nose and cut his lip. So he was gone, and he didn't come back. So you know, Leilua ended up coming on in replacement for an outside back anyway. So I guess they were lucky in that regard. But it was just a real sort of grind them out start to the game after the super early try to Simonson. But it was just, for me, it was just two stop start. I'm pretty sure it was like 21 penalties. And that you just, for a finals game, you like a little bit of sort of flow. But there was so many whistles, and you're just like, oh man, are they just gonna keep going with this? Like it was crazy. And yeah, Melbourne tried to sort of take the safe route and at the start of that second half, and tried to take the penalty goals when they were on offer, instead of trying to put the pressure on the line. But I think obviously, it's finals. It doesn't matter how much you win by. But I just think I don't know. I don't know if they had them nervous at all, because they'd only beaten or been beaten by Canberra four weeks ago. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what sort of game plan adjustments or whatever had been done by Melbourne to look at. Why they'd lost it to Canberra beforehand a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, the Melbourne game plan was right. Take the 2 points on offer when they were there and available. But
yeah, they got three penalty goals. Correct. Yeah, but it wasn't. It didn't seem, like you just said, it was two stop start. They didn't seem to have any go forward compared to Canberra. Canberra seemed to have a better go forward. In general, it was just one of those down and out sort of grimy games that it wasn't exciting to watch. But Canberra just got it done. I mean, we can talk about the whole Vunivalu not going out sort of episode, which I was actually going to bring up later as a possible dud of the week. But even it's not for who you think. So even if they rule that in, there was never really any specific. They had a chance to win,
it just denies them the opportunity to go for the win. When it happened, when I was watching it live, I thought for all money he was out. You see his arm slip as he goes to ground, and it slips towards the touchline, and it's just like, oh, he's gone out. And when the touchy put the flag up, I'm like, right, okay, he has gone out. Then they came back and they showed the replay, and it's like, oh wow, like he stayed in. So
Let me bring it up. So as a well, may as well now as a my dud of the week, I can't really blame the touch judge, because at the end of the day, it's the referee that I'm going off the actual match officials, rugby league match officials website. The referee has control over the assistant referees or touch judges, the referee may tell them what the duties are and may overrule their decision. So, yes, he's gone for the touchy, and the touchy's done what you've done what you just said. You've thought he's all gone for all money out, and so has the touch judge. Yes, the touch judge is closer than you are.
He had the best vantage point for it. So when he put his flag up, I thought my eyes saw the same thing his did, and obviously I'm just looking at it from a TV screen. But you know, he's got the best vantage point, so you can only trust. You can only trust what happens until obviously the replay comes up.
But why couldn't Ashley Kine overrule that? That's my dud. Is I don't know if it's not again, it's Ashley Kine, or is it just against that the rule? Is it? I just don't understand why they couldn't overrule that.
It come up on the big screen. The only thing that I can think of, and I was talking to one of our guest commentators, Jeffrey Pringle, about this exact same incident, why they couldn't overturn it as a scrum to get back the other way. The only thing I can think of is that because it wasn't when Vunivalu didn't go out. If he keeps the ball, then it's play on. Whereas if there's an indiscretion and they go, oh, looks like, you know, this person's knocked it on first and then somebody else, then the video referee can look at it and go, oh, okay, we can change the decision. This bloke's knocked it on first and we can change the decision at the scrum. But because it's I don't know, I'm finding it hard to explain, because the initial incident has happened that it can only be a scrum feed one way because they feel that Vunivalu gone out, then there's only one decision to be made, that they can't reverse the scrum feed, because it's not necessarily that it's not fair on Melbourne, but because the initial infraction would just mean that Vunivalu's caught the ball in the in goal and he just plays the ball instead of...
And that's what he could have just played the ball.
That's all I can think of.
And it's possibly a grey area as well. Like, I mean, I'm only going off their rules, so it's possibly a grey area.
To try and research that and possibly find out why it wouldn't have been as simple as everybody at the ground has seen it, and why the bunker couldn't have tipped off to the referees, which they do multiple times throughout the game, hey, hang on a minute, he hasn't actually gone out. So what do you do? Do you just go, oh, he hasn't gone out, so let's just take the ball back over to where it originally happened and Vunivalu plays the ball? Or do you have a scrum feed and just switch the feed back to Melbourne?
Yeah, and like it's possibly a grey area, but irregardless, look, the Raiders played well enough, and they probably would have stopped the Storm anyway. So they played well enough to win that game. So,
nothing in the lead up would lead you to believe that Melbourne could have got the job done anyway, even if they did get the ball, even if they kept the ball.
Yeah.
But it's obviously the Melbourne Storm. But for me too, obviously we're glossing over the horrendous mistake by Josh Addo-Carr coming off his own line. They've just defended brilliantly to hold Canberra out. And the second tackle, I think it was, was it the 77th minute or 78th minute, crunch time, and Melbourne are up 10-6. And Addo-Carr just makes that horrendous mistake. And the ball just popped straight up in the air. And they didn't, the Canberra didn't even muck around. They just, passed it, called Bateman back underneath him, just did a little flick behind and straight in. So they didn't even try and sort of sustain pressure. They knew that they were going to be able to get in, and they took their opportunity.
And yeah, that, just with that Okar as well, that was probably my other little point before we move on the other games. I don't know if it's just it's ever since the State of Origin series, Ado Carr, I don't know if he's lost a step or just lost a gear. It's not that he's not quick. It's not that. I just don't. He doesn't seem to have that explosive game like he used to, at least at the start of the year.
Just could just be a bit of fatigue. But they rested him. They rested him against the Cowboys a couple of weeks, last week.
Yeah.
They rested Monster and they rested Ado Carr. So he should be, you can say that fatigue could be a part of it, but he had, they gave him and Munster the week off because obviously it should have been a cakewalk against North Queensland, but they gave him the week off whether Bellamy had seen something throughout the week and has just said, right, let's give him a rest and let's freshen him up for the finals.
Yeah, and he might come good later, but he just has. I don't know. It just seems, compared to Vunivalu, I didn't see his explosiveness or his involvement as much as it has been. At least in the first half of the season,
his involvement was down, and the only problem with that is if you're a winger, then you're stuck on one side of the field. Unless you're going to come in and start looking for work, then you can get lost in translation. Lost in the game a little bit when, if you don't sort of come in too much and start looking for a little bit of work.
The next game also took me by surprise as well. The Manly getting over the Sharks 28-16, which was the first elimination final game. I guess it just took me by surprise because, I always thought Manly was in with a chance. I didn't really think they were going to win that game.
No, probably not as much by the margin. Yeah, 12-point margin by the end of it. But
yeah,
I didn't think Manly looked like losing. Really?
No.
They come out early and they hit hard. That Aiden Fanua Blake, good grief! Like he's got a neck on him like a friggin' tire. he is just an animal. I thought they looked like they'll coast, not so much coasting, but I didn't think they threw too much pressure at them or anything like that. Obviously the score probably flattered them a little bit as well with Josh Morris going over, a couple of minutes before full time. So realistically, you take that 6 points off and it's 28-10. So I didn't expect Manly to do it in a bit of a canter, really. But the way they come out, their depth has been tested again. Obviously with no Tom Trbojevic and no Marty Taupau last week, and they end up getting the W and essentially, send the Sharks packing. So
I think Daly Cherry Evans really stood up with that game. It's probably one of his best games he had all year, I thought. He topped the tackle breaks with 7 for a halfback. That's, I wouldn't say it's rare, but it's very, especially for him, it's very unusual. Sorry, he tied with Tyrannosaurus next wreck for Fanua Blake 7. So
T-Rex neck.
Yeah, T-Rex. Actually, that'll be it. T-Rex neck. He tied with for 7. Yeah, he just had played a classic captain's game. Seemed to be everywhere. Controlled the game.
Meezy's taken the line on as well if he's breaking a lot of tackles. That means he's testing out the line of defense, and when you keep going with what's working for you, then you just keep going. I didn't think that that Cronulla offered up much resistance really, but that the back end of the first half sort of got a little bit sloppy with drop balls and things like that. A lot of mistakes came in the back end of the first half. I thought that was that sort of. Oh, not so much ordinary, but it just sort of took away from how well Manly were actually playing in that first half. And then by the second half, Cronulla just had to start throwing the ball around, and then they were dropping the ball. They ended up completing under 70%. That's just not going to get the job done. And they also said on the broadcast as well that over the course of the year, they have the third worst completion rate in the comp. And for a team that, you know, a team that finished, where did they finish? They finished seventh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a team that finished seventh to have the third worst completion rate in the comp, that's that's telling you, I don't know, that's telling you something. They're letting a lot of people go to it at the end of the year as well.
Well, that's Gals. That was the next thing I was sort of going to bring up. Yeah, obviously Gallen's retiring, but it's interesting. John Morris, their coach, has come out, I guess, after the press conference and said their salary cap is the key concern for the Sharks this off season because it's been a distraction all season, and they've got to get it down. Like it's as simple as that. He said, it has to be sorted sooner rather than later because it's been a distraction all season.
They're bringing back in Jesse Ramien.
Yeah.
And I didn't think they had any salary cap to spare in the first place. So how have they been able to sign him for next year? So who does that squeeze out? And I think they're signing him to a pretty handsome deal as well. So who are they squeezing out of that back line? Whichever Morris is there?
Did Gallen's retirement free up a bit of money?
It would have, but you've still got to replace him though. That's the thing. You can't just go, okay, cool. You know, we've just freed up whatever sort of salary cap hit Gal takes. But you've still got to be able to replace him. So yeah. That's the main part as well. And they're losing Jade Braley to us next year. You know, they've obviously got his younger brother that's actually replacing him on that they're bringing him on off the bench.
Off the bench, correct? Yeah.
So I think they essentially play the same position. So, I haven't seen much of the younger Braley brother, but I do like Jaden Braley a lot. So he didn't play in this particular game. But yeah, they have been using the younger Braley brother off the bench, so I can only assume that would just be a natural sort of fit back in. But I think he'll be a loss next year, Jaden Braley, and obviously Gal's a little bit, you know, a little bit step slower. But they've got some massive work to do.
Like just to get, I guess. Just the salary cap, and you'd think, a lot of work to do in the off season. And just to finish on them, you would think Bronson Cherry will be probably, well, after the season he had, he'll probably at least be looking for an upgrade on his contract, you'd think. So,
he played a couple of games last year, and this has probably been his full first year. And I'm not in for, you know, people just going straight out there. Oh, I've had one no, good season, and I automatically just depends on what sort of, what sort of low grade contract is on. If he's on, you know, one of the cheaper contracts, if he's on under $100,000 or something like that, okay, you know, you might be able to restructure his deal, and give him a bit of a pay rise. But you know, if he's on the last year of his deal, I'm not sure of his contract details. So it'd be interesting. What happens with him. That's the thing too, can they simply afford to pay him?
Well,
that's,
the only other the one they let go was Kyle Flanagan to the Roosters next year. So
that's what I was thinking of. Yeah, it was the young kid Flanagan. He's going to the Roosters.
So they
They're anointing him as the heir apparent to Cooper Cronk.
So they, if you look at, I guess, just to sort of finish on them, Sean Johnson, Fifita, Woods, Graham, Dugan, Matt Moylan, plus their penalty of 350,000 takes them up to half the cap.
Oof.
So the penalties probably hurt them, obviously. But
yeah, that'll be hurting.
But they still got another 24 players to add to a to feed in that roster. So
no, that's right. Yeah. So yeah, there's gonna have to be those sort of lower end guys that are probably going to have to take a sacrifice again.
For or some of these higher guys like restructuring maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. That's the other thing too. Generally, that doesn't happen where they sort of go, yeah, no worries, I'll take less money.
No, yeah, it's not like the NFL where they don't mind restructuring their, their deals, so to speak. The NFL really, I mean, it's not, look, you shouldn't blame a player for wanting to take less money, but the NFL seemed to restructure it a little bit better. But that's probably purely due to their guaranteed money, so.
Oh, well, that's the thing too, yeah. They're all obviously the ones here in Australia are all guaranteed, whereas here's over there you've got to negotiate real hard to get your guaranteed monies up, and obviously their salary cap's a lot higher, and their salaries for their star players are insane.
Yeah, that is true.
Insane.
The last game it's quickly becoming my favourite stadium to watch football. Not that I've been there, but to watch it on TV, Bankwest Stadium in Sydney. Eels.
The stadium up here next year will change your tune with that.
Yeah, well, you can, if, yeah, you just give me a free ticket. That'll be great. The Eels.
I'll go straight down to the Cowboys League stub now, and I'll put that to them, and I'll get back to you on that one.
All right, yeah, that'll be great. We'll do a live podcast. That'll be fantastic. We'll do a
live podcast from the brand new stadium.
That's an unnamed stadium. Eels.
Nobody knows it's going to be named yet. Anyway.
Demoralizing the Broncos, 58-0. Great crowd, just under 30,000. But
wraparound record too.
Man, 58-0, like. There's not a lot to say, but because, look, I don't know. Like, I mean, across the park, Parra played well. Mitchell Moses, probably one of the best games I've seen him play. And Sivo, McIver Sivo, he is just becoming massive. A cult hero to everybody.
He's another Sammy Radradra.
Well, that would be my next thing I was going to say. They're probably not even going to bother to have a look in with him now because they've got McIver Sivo.
Imagine those two on either wing. Good God.
Look, 1-13, 1-17 either. As well, great game by Eels. But I guess let's talk about Broncos. What do they need to do? Like, I mean, that game, if anything was glaringly obvious, it was their halves.
Yeah, but that's been a problem with them all year. But the other thing is too, is I saw the Eels, and I was alerted to this as well by Jeff as well, that you see the Eels come out with intent, and then their intent was to completely and utterly destroy Anthony Milford. Because every time he touched the ball, he got hammered. And I think he started to become a bit hesitant, and he's played plenty of fullback in his career, but he's played more fullback probably than he has 5-8, 5-8, maybe not so much for Brisbane, but it just seemed like it could just completely take him out, and they just had no fifth tackle options. Their attack was just in complete disarray, dropping the ball everywhere. I think by the end of the first half, the possession share was like 70-30. And when you can't get your hands on the ball, then you don't give your forwards, which is the Broncos' strong point.
Yeah.
You don't give those guys the opportunities to land decent platform for your halves, even though the halves are a little bit of a problem. But they didn't give them the opportunities to be able to do anything.
Well, not when they're like their destroyer Payne Haas total meters was 97 meters for the entire game, which is ridiculous.
That's right. Yeah, but to me also too, you know, David Fifita, you sort of they were just getting two and three in every time. He wasn't breaking the line as much, you know. Well, not so much breaking the line, you know, but busting out of tackles. You know, the offload game wasn't really there. You know, Payne Haas, like I said, was pretty ordinary. Matt Lodge wasn't quite there. You know, look like at halftime he knew everything was dust and he was just trying to get in everybody's face and look like he was trying to eat them. So I think he was getting very frustrated by the end of it.
As you would.
Correct. Brisbane only had 24 sets for the whole game.
And
when you're giving up tries willy-nilly and you can't hang on to the ball, and then when you do have the ball, you're coming out of your own line, like you're not even getting quality sets on the opposition's line. It's just, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and there, I guess, you're right. Like, there probably was no platform from the forwards. Even when you just look at their run meters, we're talking like 1,200 meters difference between the Eels running at 2,107 meters and Broncos 813 in total.
That's right. If you can't even break 1,000 total running meters, then that means you either got no ball or you're just being completely dominated. And the other thing was too that I'd sort of noticed as well is that there was a couple of tries that that the Eels scored and they caught Milford out of position at fullback as well. There was a couple of tries that went out wide, like a couple of grubber kicks that Moses had put through, and that they were left wanting, and Milford was nowhere to be seen. He was caught out of position. So that sort of compounded things, and you know, once, and
we're probably not giving enough, and it doesn't mean like we can sort of keep talking about how terrible Brisbane played, but we're probably really not giving enough credit to their game plan, like you said, with the Eels, and just that they just completely, you know, outclassed them.
Yeah, outclassed, outmuscled.
And outmuscled, correct. So, it was entertaining to watch. I mean, the score's not great, clearly, especially if you're a Broncos fan.
Well, that's the thing. It's the highest ever margin in finals game. 50, obviously the margin was 58 points, but no team had ever put on 50 in a finals game. So, you know, sort of two records there. So you just, you know, what do you do if you're the Broncos? Like, you've got Darius Boyd sort of eating up a fair chunk of salary and he's not playing terrific. Like, it's just, you know, I guess, you know, in the coming weeks we'll sort of go through a few of the teams that are no longer in the competition at the moment that are no longer playing. But, you know, what is Brisbane, for them to get into the eight, I thought was pretty lucky for them, because the way that they sort of started and the way they sort of spluttered a little bit coming towards the end of the season, I think they're very lucky to squeeze into the eight anyway.
Yeah, I mean, especially coming in with a, I think, minus 52 for and against. So, they limped into the finals. But like you said, they're another team we could talk about later, and especially around the off season, because they definitely have the forwards. Their forwards, their bread and butter. But their halves, there's going to be a lot of talking to. It's also the management, because the other person that I thought was at the moment a complete waste of money was Jack Bird. Like,
did he play 3 games this year?
Yeah. And
I think he's played about a total of 10 games for the Broncos in total.
Yeah. Hasn't justified his contract enough, which is not Seabold's fault because he didn't sign him up. But
he inherited that, so
he did inherit that. But it's gonna be just an interesting, I guess, couple of weeks. They probably won't change anything, but at least to see what they're going to do.
Was it the coach or was it management that called out the Broncos and said, was it today that they called out the Broncos players to make them feel even more embarrassed about what happened over the weekend, and you know whether there's going to be some sweeping changes with their lineup as it pertains to sort of next year and things like that. So because we've got to remember too that David Fifita hasn't signed, and he can negotiate with other clubs as of November 1. So it's going to be 15 other teams in the league that are going to swooping around trying to get a piece of Fifita and see if he wants to come to their club. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Because from what I'd heard, Darren Lockyer had come out and said that we don't really have a lot of salary cap to spare. So
and who's left? Scary. Like there's not many, except for that. I think they're looking possibly at the Melbourne half that's on the outer.
Brady Croft.
Yeah. There's not many halves left that I know of that at least haven't signed or aren't on the outer at least to look for. So
the problem is too, like, you know, the halves combination last year at Melbourne was Brody Croft and Riley Jax. Well, you know, Riley Jax was a part of that. Riley Jax went to the Gold Coast year and he did, he was trying to fight to get into the first grade side. So who's to say that Brody Croft, obviously, you know, Melbourne had let Riley Jax go, but if they do the same thing with Brody Croft, is he going to be the same kind of player outside of the Melbourne system? Like, there's not many players that go away outside that Melbourne system, and especially if they're young and they don't live up to expectations.
Well, and I don't think Brody Croft hasn't had a kicking game yet, so I can't. He's going to prove that he's got a kicking game at least. So. Because he didn't have one.
Game. It's just, well, yeah, it's not a world class kicking game, but
no, you've got to call Brisbane a high class side because they are one of the juggernauts. They get the ratings. They have one of the biggest fan bases. So yeah, will be an interesting off season with them. Stud and dud of the week. I've named a dud. Did you have any studs and duds this week?
The only thing I'd sort of come up with a little bit this week was a bit of a dud, and I've called him a dud already before this podcast right now. But it's for the class that the country produces. It's the U.S. national basketball team again. Like, it just for them to be in a 7-8 and 8th playoff against Poland, and obviously they wipe the floor with Poland, but for them to be as poor as what they were throughout this tournament throughout this World Cup of basketball has been a little stunning. I thought they would struggle a little bit, but I'd still thought that they would have been obviously in at least in medal contention still. But for them to bow out the way that they did, I thought was pretty poor. And you hear some of the commentary about it. I think Shane Heal was talking about it during one of the Australia games, and he just said you know, a lot of these teams that are playing here have got a sprinkling of NBA talent. The US national side has all NBA talent. Every single one.
Yeah,
of them
that's is a good point.
The NBA.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, we've thought
that's brilliant. Yeah, and for me, well, I think one of the reasons why they weren't very successful was whether or not it was enough prep time, because more and more players kept pulling out as the weeks went on. So they had to keep adding new players in. And okay, they've got a pretty good coaching regime there at the moment with Greg Popovich and Steve Kerr. But
they don't have the chemistry. That's what it looks like.
No, that's right. But the other thing is too. It's the international game as well. It's different. It's different to the NBA. It's the NBA is a victim of its own success in regards to some of the rule changes that they have made in the NBA, as opposed to the rules that are normal FIBA rules that everybody else plays by. And one of them is the defensive 3 seconds. Like in FIBA rules, there's none of that. So you can play a true traditional zone defense. And you can just sit somebody under the basket and just welcome traffic into the paint and go, hey, come on in. Yeah. Especially when you're playing against teams like France, who have got the reigning defensive player of the year and Rudy Gobert. Australia's got, obviously Aaron Baines and Andrew Bogut aren't the most defensively minded centers, but you can just park somebody under the bucket. And when the US don't have that chemistry, they rely on a lot of isolation and pick and rolls. And that game doesn't work as well as what it would in the NBA.
True. And I guess echoing on what you're saying, it does seem, it's a really good point from Shane Hill. It did seem, now that you're sort of saying it, they all have NBA game talent, but it just didn't seem the chemistry was there, really. No. So, you can't. I guess you can't blame. It's not. Like, I don't know if it's like a finger pointing at. Well, we can't really blame Popovich, because he's got to play with have who he deals with.
He can only coach with the talent that have said yes, I will come and play.
Yeah,
and. For what the U.S. national basketball team put out there, we said they're 12 NBA players, and I'm pretty sure it was Shane Hill again that said that. I think he said six or seven out of those guys that were playing on that team all average over 18 points a game in the NBA. So there's a lot of them that are genuine scorers, and most times when you go to international when you're playing against other countries with FIBA rules, the time's different. It's not 12 minute quarters, it's 10 minute quarters. There's just little subtleties that they've been playing with for their whole lives. And also too, with the NCAA is some of the rules are different there compared to the NBA rules as well. So when they jump from college to the NBA, it's different. And then when they get picked to represent their country, and they come and play in these international tournaments, it just takes them a little while to get their bearings.
Yeah, and I suppose with the European sides and even Australia, we are we're abided by the FIBA rules, playing with the FIBA rules. So they're a very good point there, I guess. Especially
can't take credit for that. That's all Shane Hill.
Well, this is good point. Yeah, thanks Shane for that. Shout out to Shane Hill.
Well,
if he's listening.
Shout out to the Hammer.
To the Hammer. before we sign off, did you have a stud of the week or?
I did. I had multiple studs of the week, and I would say that would be the Sydney Public for not making the finals look absolutely horrendous, and there was some good full crowds this week at all the three venues that were in Sydney this week for the finals. I thought that was good. Obviously, with the closing of Allianz Stadium at the moment, they Manly couldn't take their game to Allianz, So they were allowed to have their game at Brookie, which was good. I think there was nearly 16,000 there, which is great. Good to see Brookie full. Obviously, there was near 30,000 at Bank West, and it looks terrific when it's full. And I think there was about 30-odd thousand there at the SCG.
30,000.
Even though there was there looked like there was a few empty seats there, but it didn't look as ridiculous as what 30,000 would look at ANZ. Even 30,000, if it was at Allianz, would look pretty good.
Yeah, the SCG is one of those. I mean, it's a cricket oval, so it's one of those games, one of those venues where it's hard. It had to be always near capacity to make it look massive and everything like that. But like you said, 30,000 people still had that atmosphere there. So.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, it was terrific. And, you know, also with both, you know, essentially the same game from the week before, you know, you thought that, okay, it's a finals game, but there was, you know, sort of the thought process of, oh, well, we've seen that game last week, so why do we need to go and see it again? But obviously it's a finals game, so you know, and traditional rivals, it's the oldest rivalry in the game, so I thought the Sydney public went out there and you know, voted with their feet and went and actually went and watched the games, and they were all quality games in their own right, with all three games that were in Sydney over the weekend. I thought they were really good.
Well, that'll do it, I guess, for the this week's NRL podcast. Stay tuned for upcoming podcast, where there'll most likely be another NFL podcast this week.
NFL week two.
Don't forget again to follow us all on the socials, and we'll talk to you soon. I'm Jason.
And I'm Miles. Peace out, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.